Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, with a rental crisis impacting on every part of the country, will a new bill help push holiday lets back into the long-term rental market? The shocking murder of two-year-old Santina Cawley. We'll hear about the events leading up to her death. Helping Ukrainians, but volunteers here say they have no resources and beg for help from government. A 17-year-old becomes the only openly gay professional footballer in Britain. Is it a watershed moment for the sport? The Children's Ombudsman Dr. Niall Muldoon on a significant increase in the number of complaints to his office in the past year, and one-hit wonders. What makes a song a hit? And why do some artists only have one successful track? Text us this morning, 51551. Email todaycb@rte.ie or on Twitter, we are at Today with Clare. Now, today, Cabinet is expected to sign off on the plan to move the National Maternity Hospital to the site at St. Vincent's Hospital. And despite the strong opposition, the agreement is unchanged. Paused 2 weeks ago when ministers expressed concerns around the ownership and ethos of the hospital, it was widely flagged that the contentious phrase clinically appropriate could be changed or deleted. That has not happened, and the hospital is expected to get the green light today. Well, I'm joined by Daniel McConnell, political editor with the Irish Examiner. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
So yesterday, Roisin Shortall, the co-leader of the Social Democrats, said on Drive Time she's calling on the government not to sign off on the move today. She said more time is needed to address the definition of that term, clinically appropriate, and other things. How will Minister Stephen Donnelly address that contentious phrase? Or is a line very firmly being drawn under this entire discussion today?
Yeah, so I think from a formal perspective, a line has very much been drawn in the sand, and the government will proceed very much along the same lines it had proposed to do 2 weeks ago. It's their contention, and certainly it's their feeling that, you know, now that they have unanimity around the cabinet table, that they can proceed on the basis that they had intended. You know, this clinically appropriate phrase, which has become, I suppose, the lightning rod or the focus of much attention, particularly in the last week or so. You know, it's the government's position that, you know, the phraseology was put in at the behest of the HSC, not at St. Vincent's. And this was essentially to copper fasten the structures of the hospital to make sure that it didn't get diluted down to becoming kind of an overspill for the main hospital. But, you know, critics of it have said, and even Kieran Mulvey, who negotiated this very complex deal between the parties in 2016, you know, gave voice to this idea that phrase actually dilutes the legal standing that all legally permissible procedures will go ahead in this hospital. And despite all the assurances given from the government, from the clinicians at the hospital, you know, those who are critical of this have yet to be appeased. And obviously the likes of Nessa Harrigan, a lot of attention will focus on her in the next 24 hours ahead of that vote in the Dáil on the Sinn Féin motion in relation to all of this, and whether or not she stays in the government benches, or whether or not she feels compelled enough to go and support the Sinn Féin motion.
Let's talk about that now, because that motion, which, as you say, Sinn Féin is tabling this evening, that calls for the new National Maternity Hospital to be built on public land. And Nessa Harrigan, as you said, is in favour of this, we know, because in April she said it must be fully in state ownership, the hospital and the land, and many Green Party members are co-signatories to that statement. So what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I think she's very close, I think, to either jumping ship or will find some mechanism to abstain on that vote, given her concerns have not shifted. And all the assurances over the weekend, I mean, journalists like myself have been in touch with her repeatedly to kind of say, listen, have your concerns been assuaged or not? And she's been made it very clear, and a very long Twitter thread from her yesterday made it very clear that she still has those very strong concerns. You know, it was the formal position of the Green Party previously going into government was that it should be on public land, publicly built, etc. That, and even Eamon Ryan articulated that, but he in the Dáil last week, you know, gave voice to, I suppose, his shift in position, saying that he is now assured and reassured by the 300-year lease, by the fact that the constitution of the hospital, the new hospital, it makes it very clear that it's a secular organisation, etc. That, but again, you know, he did concede, and Stephen Donnelly has conceded repeatedly, that you're coming from a low base when it comes to the trust of the women of Ireland and healthcare and the role of religious orders in healthcare, and particularly women's healthcare in Ireland over the last century. So, you know, there are very genuine concerns, but it was interesting this morning, Eamon Ryan on his way into cabinet this morning said, you know, while he respects Nessa Harrigan's concerns, the deal will proceed and cabinet will approve this today.
So what happens then? Cabinet approves this deal today, Daniel. Is that it then? That doesn't go back to the Houses of the Oireachtas. When we talk about a vote in the Dáil, we're talking about a Sinn Féin motion.
Yeah, no, the substantive decision will be the cabinet's decision, and that will essentially allow the works to proceed, planning, all the rest of, to go ahead, and you know, the form, because essentially the new structures have been set up by Vincent's and the National Maternity Hospital. It required government approval. It will get that today. So ultimately, that the formal process will proceed. The Sinn Féin motion is essentially a motion of the Dáil, and it's not binding. So therefore, it can't stop that or override that government decision. So ultimately, the important business is what will happen at cabinet today.
But it's significant that if you're a government TD and you want to show that you object to this hospital going ahead and the way it's currently set up, you'll have to vote in favour of a Sinn Féin motion.
Yeah, and ultimately, if you do that, you will lose your party whip and essentially be outside the realm of government. So, I mean, there is a significant price to pay if Nessa Harrigan decides to go that way. And, you know, she's not alone in her concerns, but I think other people like Catherine Martin, the Arts Minister, who had held out her expressions of support for this deal until she got those letters of comfort from the various parties over the weekend, you know, they share those concerns about it not being publicly owned fully and, this argument around, ethos, etc. like that. Now, I do think the argument around ethos has somewhat dissipated given the very clear, the constitution and the other commitments that the nuns wouldn't, have no act or hand or part in the running of the hospital. I think largely to many, those issues have been dealt with, not to all. But I will say, there are still issues around, well, what happens down the line? It may be fine for this government to say this, but a government down 20 years down the line may change their tune and different things may happen then.
Two quick ones, because we're going to be talking about volunteers who are helping Ukrainians settle in Ireland, saying that they have no resources. That's coming up later on the programme. But today there is likely to be a decision taken by Cabinet on this payment to people who've opened up their homes to Ukrainians.
Yeah, so they're going to essentially approve this €400 payment per month for people who take in Ukrainian refugees into their home or into their second home. The significance of it, Claire, as well, is that they've made it that it's going to be tax neutral. So if your income tax credits won't be affected by getting this payment, nor will any welfare payments that you or your family are entitled to, because ultimately the danger would be that if you got this additional payment, it might put you over a particular threshold. We know that the payment won't land into people's accounts until probably July. It will be paid out by the Department of Social Protection. So there's still a bit of waiting time between now and then, but ultimately the government will give its approval today. So that in itself is significant. And I think what they're trying to do is entice more people to pledge whatever extra room that they may have, because obviously the pressure's on in terms of the capacity within the system.
Now, while they're dealing with all of that at Cabinet, I'm sure alarm bells must be ringing about these British government threats to rip up at least part of the Brexit protocol.
Yeah, Simon Coveney has made it clear that he was speaking to Liz Truss, his opposite number, within the last 24 hours and said, listen, breaking international law is not the way to go. Unilateral action is not the way to go. And ultimately, she's due to go into the House of Commons. The British press is sort of ramping it up, saying that she will trigger some move that will have the effect of ripping up some part of the Northern Ireland Protocol. But they have sort of made these threats before, so it'll be interesting to see whether or not she actually goes through with it or not. But, tensions are definitely much higher than they have been. And obviously, Boris Johnson's visit to Belfast yesterday did little to dampen down those tensions and certainly didn't seem to solve anything. I don't think there was any real expectation that he was going to go up and, deliver devolved government immediately or anything like that. But I think, a lot of the parties came out of those meetings with very glum faces and seemed to be very unhappy and dissatisfied with the response that they got from Boris Johnson. So we're not in a good space, there's no doubt about it.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about that and about those meetings now. Daniel, thank you very much. Well, the British government will set out steps to address East-West trade issues between Britain and Northern Ireland today, but they won't introduce a new law this week. Now, that's according to the Northern Secretary of State, Brandon Lewis, this morning, despite those briefings far and wide that Daniel referred to, that Liz Truss would announce plans to legislate to undermine the protocol in the House of Commons today. I'm joined now by Claire Hannah, SDLP MP, and also John Martin, Road Haulage Association's Policy Manager for Northern Ireland. Thank you both for being with us this morning. Claire, I want to start with you, because Daniel described there the faces emerging from those meetings with Boris Johnson yesterday. You were at one of those meetings. Did what he was saying chime with what Brandon Lewis is saying this morning?
I think, yes, I was one of those faces that was, I suppose, a bit confused, because the Prime Minister's position is confused and confusing, and it's difficult to know what the strategy is, if there is indeed a strategy, because in that private conversation and in public pronouncements, it's clear that the Prime Minister still hasn't confronted the basics of Brexit and the geography that we have, and that a lot of these moves and manoeuvres are more about Tory Party internals than other things.
When you say he hasn't confronted the realities of Brexit, do you mean he doesn't understand the realities of Brexit?
I think when the conversation got a little bit technical, I didn't sense that he was particularly engaged in the details and the solutions. And I suppose, like a lot of people, he wants everything to be exactly the same as it was before Brexit, despite agreeing a lot of red lines and conditions that mean things can't be exactly the same. And in that regard, it's not easy to discern what the UK government's bottom line is. And I would echo the frustration of Simon Coveney and others and the EU Commission, because it does appear that every time there's movement from the opposite side, those concessions are kind of pocketed and then the hand is out for the next one, and none of us are much the wiser about what those actors will accept.
So are you in any way clearer today on what Boris Johnson is actually proposing?
We hopefully will be clearer after this statement from Liz Truss.
But you were sitting down with the British Prime Minister yesterday, so we would expect today that you would be able to say, yeah, I know exactly where he's going, I know where he wants to get to and how he's going to get there. But you're saying you didn't get that yesterday.
I wish that was the case, and I wish that had been clear at any point in the last number of years. And for example, where the SDLP specifically and repeatedly pressed was on protecting our single market access and that unique economic selling point that Northern Ireland desperately needs to just reverse decades of low productivity and sluggishness. And he was, you know, effusively warm about that. But that position is contradicted by a number of their other red lines, things around jurisdiction of the ECJ and other things. So that's my point when I say that his position is confused and confusing, because he seems to want quite a lot of things while insisting on red lines that make them very, very difficult.
Did you find the meeting frustrating?
Yes.
While you were there or afterwards, or did you feel nonplussed that you weren't any the wiser?
It's the same frustration that many of us have felt over many years, that to solve something, and there's no doubt that this stuff is complicated, and there's no doubt that the solutions aren't that simple, or they would have been found in 2016. But it is frustrating when you don't feel that you are have a negotiating partner that is being completely upfront, that has resolved in its own mind what its needs and wants are, and that is being an honest broker in terms of trying to achieve an outcome that's suitable for the broadest possible range of people and interests in Northern Ireland. And let's not forget that, you know, the vast majority of people in Northern Ireland voted for parties to go into government. And it is an additional frustration that government and governance are being withheld by the DUP when not one single thing that the Assembly does can affect the outcome of this negotiation.
Well, Claire Hannah, stay with us if you can, because as I said, John Martin is with us too, Road Haulage Association's policy manager for Northern Ireland. John, thank you for being with us. What are your own issues with the protocol at the moment?
The biggest issue that's getting reported to me by members is the impact that it has on the movement of goods from GB to Northern Ireland. The cost implications, the bureaucracy, the time delays, and particularly in relation to the movement of foodstuffs.
What sort of cost is it adding for your members?
At this moment in time, we've been using a figure of in the region of 27 to 30%. I was on a call this morning with a member on another media outlet, and I was criticised for using such a low figure. That figure has been given to me by numerous haulage operators and has an impact on their haulage costs. What they're saying is that, in actual fact, those costs have been masked somewhat by the government support schemes, the movement assistance scheme, which is designed to financially support the movement of foodstuffs, and the trader support service. If and when those two schemes end, which we've been told by the government will be 2023 and 2024, the increases in the cost of movements will increase not not 35%, they're talking about in the region of 100 to 120%. And what they're using as a model or a benchmark is a lot of companies have companies in the south of Ireland, and they're looking at the costs of moving foodstuffs from GB into Southern Ireland. And that would be the full impacts of the protocol once it's implemented in Northern Ireland.
I'm sure you're aware that the Northern Ireland Secretary said he wanted to see these light check green lanes established for goods entering the region from Great Britain. So those goods that aren't destined to travel into the European Union single market, into the Republic and on from there. Do you support that idea? Would it work, do you think?
Yes, certainly from the very outset, whenever we seen the framework of the protocol, we raised our concerns in relation to the impact on trade. What we're calling for is the free movement of goods from GB into Northern Ireland that's not going to end up in the European community. And that means no checks, no bureaucracy, no paperwork, because 80% of the goods or 85% of the goods come from GB into Northern Ireland remain within the UK single market.
Yeah, but you know, if you're the EU, you'd be looking at that going, well, there you go. There's the back door into the European single market for Brazilian beef and other things that they don't want. And it's going to come through GB into NI and into the EU.
Well, we have officially asked the department in Northern Ireland for figures in relation to product being returned to GB that wasn't acceptable within the European single market. The department have given us a official figures of 0.087% of product returned from Northern Ireland to GB because it wasn't acceptable. And it wasn't because it wasn't acceptable from a standards perspective, it was because the paperwork was inaccurate. So that's a very, very low impact or low risk.
But that's because there are checks in place. If there are no checks in place, you're going to see a different number.
Potentially. But at the end of the day, we've got to look at risk. Is the risk significant? If it's not significant, then why is it costing the UK economy £850 million a year whenever there's minimal risk?
Claire Hannah, what do you say to this idea of the green lane for goods that are coming from Great Britain into Northern Ireland and not going any further?
Well, I can readily understand John's frustration and the frustration of a lot of businesses who have, as I say, seen red tape increase because of Brexit. And it's worth saying that businesses and traders in Britain are equally frustrated. I sit on the UK Trade and Business Commission, and sector after sector after sector, we hear that that Brexit has created barriers and challenges. And again, it bears repeating that at the stroke of a pen, a veterinary and SPS arrangement could address all of these issues if the UK government chose to be flexible, particularly at a time when they're saying they're happy to maintain the standards, and that could address the issues that John's speaking about and that many businesses are. So yes, I think there are. I mean, looking at risk and looking at things like trusted trader and labellings, my understanding is that there are challenges around the UK provision of data to allow. It's one thing to say, you know, that the risk is low, but if you're not providing data in real time, it's difficult to be able to prove that low risk. And I think that is the kind of place where there is a landing zone. But things like unilateral actions and kind of quite ludicrous red lines, like the European Court of Justice, make it difficult to find those places. Now, there is a fairly coherent Northern Ireland Brexit and Business Working Group who've done pretty heroic work over the last few years, staying on top of the details and the potential solutions. And they have advanced four or five pretty reasonable proposals that would reduce some of the bureaucracy. Okay. But it does require flexibility from both the UK and the EU.
Claire Hannah and John Martin, thank you for joining us on the programme today. With a rental crisis impacting on just about every part of the country, we'll be asking whether a new bill will help push holiday lets back into the long-term rental market. Sinn Féin's Eoin Óibrín will be with us after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.